From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT, with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast.
Welcome to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. Clifton Duncan is a classically trained actor and singer who earned his MFA from New York University's prestigious graduate acting program. He's appeared both off and on Broadway, as well as in several guest starring roles on television. His career, though, was cut short after refusing to take the COVID vaccine. A new career, though, was born, because in the last few years, he's amassed a huge following on Twitter and YouTube, which is the home of his excellent Clifton Duncan podcast, and has appeared on several popular internet shows as well, including Timcast, Dr. Drew, and the Andrew Klavan Show. Recently, he has announced his involvement in a new docuseries called Follow the Science, which is being released or previewed now with other social media heavyweights, including Zuby and Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, among others. He's here with us now. Clifton, what's going on, my friend? Thank you for coming on the show. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm hanging in there, Joseph. How about yourself?
Really? Just hanging in there, huh? It's Saturday night, Clifton. Come on. What's going on?
Yeah.
Is it a rough day, or what? What's going on?
Oh, no. It's just, well, you know, it's, I hate to admit it, but it's kind of late for me. I've been trying to be consistent about getting in bed around 10 p.m. and then getting up early and seizing the day. But
yeah, that's good. I've been doing that too. I get up at least by 7. I was doing 4:30 wake ups for a while there. That's a little bit extreme, but I'm definitely an early bird now. So,
well, it's a certain point.
Well, thanks for
me. I was gonna say, for me, you know, past 8 a.m., it's like, well, now the day is wasted.
Right. Well, that morning energy is the best creative energy for me now. I mean, I used to be back in the day, it was like, you know, staying up for days at a time, working on music till, you know, 6 in the morning, and, you know, you get into those magical zones. But that's more of a young man's game. I find, like, you know, getting up early, starting to write right away, you're still semi-unconscious, yeah, and you get magic stuff. So what do you do in the mornings?
Well, you know what, I'm still working that out. But, you know, whenever I do sit down and write in the mornings, you know, whether it's journaling or sometimes I'll be ruminating over the issues of the day. And, you know, it's just, it feels so effortless. It feels like the ideas kind of come to you. The sentences formulate themselves. I really like, I don't know about you, but I like writing longhand. So, you know, I'm very sort of particular in the pens that I use. I have all these journals sitting around here with all these scribblings in them. So, yeah, you know, I like to, I mean, lately I've been more dedicated to just getting the heck out of bed and then going to the gym. But, you know, I do want to do more writing in the mornings. That's always the best time for me to do so.
Yeah, I do not write longhand. I'm staunchly against it. I'm a thumb typer, and everything I've ever written has been on my phone. But I am the fastest thumb typer in the land. Dude.
I think there's something about like the sort of, you know, psychophysical connection between the pen and the paper and your ideas getting out there. There's something that's more organic about it than typing on the phone. How dare you, Joseph? I won't hold it against you.
I know. Don't judge me. I know it does nothing for my image, and there you go. Throw my image to the wolves. I don't care. I'm a thumb typer on my phone. I know it's not cool or romantic at all, but it's just how I've grown accustomed to doing it. Did you happen to catch the Academy Awards? You're a gifted actor, and so I was wondering if you had caught anything about it and what you were thinking about it. I have some thoughts about Brendan Fraser. I wonder if you do.
Well, I mean, I certainly saw I saw some of the Twitter controversy surrounding Brendan Fraser, but, you know, I have to admit, you know, a lot of the entertainment stuff, award shows and everything, I sort of have to put it to the side. You know, recently I spoke to the ex-Broadway star Laura Osnes on my podcast, and we were just talking about how, given what we've been through, it is even thinking about what's going on in mainstream entertainment, unless in my case, it's, you know, it's a little bit of schadenfreude and ridiculing it. It's difficult for
you're
me.
You're good
to,
at that.
Yeah, I know. It's you know, so once someone once warned me that I might, you know, I might be burning bridges, but I'm like, you know, have you seen what these people have been saying about people like me over the past 2 years?
Right.
You know, well, I heard about the controversy surrounding Brendan Fraser, and you know, that guy has been through so much, and he's the public has been on his side for years. So, you know, the idea that I saw these like Twitter weirdos, I guess, I saw some tweet where it was like, oh, you know, it's the cis white male who's won, and I'd like. I think people are just tired of this stuff, you know. I really feel like people are just done with these whiners and complainers, these tone policers. In the publishing industry, they have sensitivity readers. They're just kind of done with everyone complaining about everything. And
exactly.
You know, you see certain evidence of that here and there, which is nice.
Well, it's funny too with Brendan Fraser, and God bless him, I have zero against him, and obviously it's insane that, you know, he should be able to, you know, play a fat man. You know, it's ridiculous that, or some kind of fat shaming thing that, you know, that was somehow wrong. I don't even really understand the logic, but it is funny though, his story of like he's been through so much because he was this massive movie star and then for a little while wasn't, and then now he is again. It's like, as far as life journeys go, that's not exactly like walking through the valley of the shadow of death. You know what I mean?
It wasn't just that he wasn't a star. I mean, I think he had like a really bad divorce or something like that, and he just got taken to the cleaners, and just, I mean, the alimony or something, there was some kind of settlement that was just really, really just heinous, absolutely heinous. And people were just like, dude, let's hang in there for Brendan Fraser. My man's going through it right now. So to see him rebound like this, is cool,
awesome.
But at the same time, in a broader sense, I wish I could say that, Oscars, those kinds of awards, they're great marketing tools. They're great career tools. But I think in the general public, I don't know if they have as much cachet anymore. And that's just a deeper question of what, you know, if that sort of arm of the entertainment world is as relevant as it used to be anyway.
Oh, it's absolutely not. You know, I don't think people are nearly as invested or involved in Hollywood movie stars anymore. I mean, look what you're doing. You're a perfect example. I mean, and you're building and you're budding up, but the new star is who you're involved in with this new docuseries. What's this called again? Follow the Science. I mean, you know, the new stars are on social media, are building YouTube platforms, are building Twitter followings. I mean, that's really, I think, where more people are paying attention. And then you have this sort of alternate universe of like, you're on Jimmy Fallon talking about the fact that you're won an Oscar, and that's okay. And listen, man, sometimes I watch those interviews. I watch the Brendan Fraser ones, and I like kind of watch in this strange way of kind of watching something so bad it's good. But I also sometimes enjoy a good personality or whatever. But you know, your heart and soul is into these like content creators that are like sort of inspiring and motivating, such as yourself. I mean, don't you think that that's what's taking some of the light from Hollywood?
Well, you know, I've said for a really long time, for years now, that the era of the movie star is over. It's like the last guard, I think, is guys like Idris Elba, maybe Chris Pratt. Some people would say like a Timothy Chalamet is one of the younger generation, maybe Robert Pattinson or something like that. But, you know, as you were alluding to, people really, you don't see young people aspiring to be movie stars so much. They want to be TikTokers and they're following podcasters and YouTubers and that kind of a thing. And, you know, for a long time, even within the industry, when I was in New York, you know, at least 10 years ago, I have friends who are complaining that, you know, oh, I went to screen test for this role, but then they gave it to some girl with 2 million Twitter followers or whatever. And I was always kind of thinking to myself, well, that could be you. You know, you're the one who's good looking and charismatic. You've got the training and the chops. But there's always been this attitude where it's like, no, I'm legitimate, but everyone else, right. that person is just a YouTuber. And, you know, and as who was just the other day I was speaking to, Konstantin Kissin, was talking about he brought up Jake Paul. I brought up Logan Paul. You know, Jake Paul is like, yeah, Jake Paul was a YouTuber, and he's boxing, you know, pulling in millions, doing pay-per-views when Mike Tyson's going to his fights. And I said, yeah, dude, Logan Paul, his brother, just had one of the most viral moments in the most recent Royal Rumble in the WWE.
Right.
You know, and I was like, who are these guys? But it just goes back to that point of, it's sort of a new era, and the new stars are online, which is sort of fitting, really, when you think about it, because if you're talking about Hollywood, you're talking about a bunch of crazy people trying to be famous. And then you talk about content creators and influencers, it's pretty much the same thing, I see. Right. So there's not too much difference there.
But it's more entertaining because it's coming from a broken soul and it's unfiltered, basically, and they're figuring it out. And you know what I mean? I'm the same way, man. I'm out here doing it myself, you know. And here's where the blessing comes from being cursed in the upside down, as you were, you know, because you were ripped out of the conventional path. And so here you are having to figure it out. And I mean, it's already serving you really well. And that's going to build, and no one can take that away from you. And like, so to me, that seems way more of a blessing than even if you were winning an Academy Award, for instance, because I don't know, maybe an Academy Award would be pretty cool, but you know, like just the grind of Hollywood outside of the upper echelon, I would say I would rather be building my own brand and just being creative. Don't you think in a way, what happened to you has been a blessing?
Well, yes and no. I mean, no, in the sense that, you know, I mean, you spend your life dedicated to something. I mean, I know you know what that is, and then it's not an option anymore, or doesn't appear to be an option anymore. So that's not the easiest thing. I wish I was, as skilled at moving on as others who've been impacted similarly seem to have been. But at the same time, there is, I think about all the times where I kind of would have to hold my tongue, or, you know, you kind of have to go along with the flow, especially as actors. Just you're expected to be very compliant and to, you know, just say yes, because you don't want to be perceived as difficult, and you want to preserve your reputation, and you want to have all the right relationships. So you basically try as much as you can to be liked by everybody. You know, there's a great book called One Less Bitter Actor, where the author talks in great detail about the casting process. And it's like, you know, oftentimes it's not the quote unquote best actor who gets the role. It's the actor that everyone feels most comfortable with. And that's like, you know, are they nice? Are they agreeable? You know, do you get along with them? I mean, I've seen guys that that I came up with, and then I see them in interviews recently, and they're so, and I hate to use this term, but they're so kind of feminized and kind of soft. And I understand what that is, because that's what the industry kind of does to you. It's and the craft, I'd say, as well. And, you know, and I just think to myself, there's so many times where I had to just say yes and be agreeable and go along with everything and hope that my quote unquote energy is right, and just try to go along and get along and just say yes. And, you know, and it's not really a dignified way to be. I feel like, especially as a man, the older I got, the more resentful I became of that. And then especially after Trump got elected and people just, their brains just kind of broke, and you're in rehearsal studios or you're on set and you hear people just say the stupidest things, and you know they have no idea what they're talking about, but they're so confident in their assertions. And you know, then you get these scripts, and you know, if you're lucky, you know, it's very lucky to have just a great agent, and later on just a manager. And I got to audition a lot, and because I happen to be black, you'd see these scripts that just had, you know, they were just dusted, saturated with all of this, you know, social justice kind of, this very obviously progressive, quote unquote, progressive point right. of view.
An agenda.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, yeah. You know, the example I use all the time is there was this procedural that I was going up for. I call it one of the Dick Wolves, you know, one of the sort of Law and Order spinoffs. And it was a perfect role, you know, the former military guy who turned doctor or something like that. And I like the scene where he's helping out this little kid who is at risk of becoming involved in the gang. And, you know, it's a nice scene between this grown man and this child. And then like the last couple of pages, it becomes about racism and how some kids aren't, you know, black kids don't get diagnosed with sickle cell at the rate that white kids get diagnosed with fibromyalgia or something, and it's only because of racism. And I'm just like, dude, if I get on this show, am I going to be sitting here fighting for the next 7 years with writers and producers and be like, you know, do we have to say that? You know, do we have to?
Right.
I don't really believe in this. This is kind of just over the top. You know, can we please take out this talking point about George Floyd, please? It's that kind of stuff over and over and over again, where you just, how much am I going to have to swallow of my integrity to maintain a career. So from in that sense, there's a sense of freedom of like, well, I can kind of say and do what I want now, and everyone else kind of have to kill their intellect in order to play along and be a part of the club. And I don't have to do that anymore. So I guess there's that.
Yeah, well, that's huge, though. I mean, that's huge. And look what's evolving. You know, not to be like your like go get him friend or something, but like
my life coach, right?
Hey, go get him. I'm not trying to be your life coach, man. But that is huge. And that's what I meant. Like, yeah, if you're in the upper echelon, you can get a script like that and go like, I see this agenda. This doesn't align with my values. I don't think that this is, you know, of the light, so to speak. I'm going to pass. But if you're just grinding it out in Hollywood, you got to take those roles regardless of how you feel about them. And so that's why I said, I think like being independent, building your own stuff. I mean, you're going to act again, you know, that's just going to happen. If you keep going the way you're going. And again, here I'm descending into life coach again, but you will. I mean, and after the break, I want to get into this docu-series that you're involved in and stuff like that. But
sure.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting concept because we hear about the world that we're in being called the upside down. And certainly there's a lot of backwards logic happening. So I just had this thought today about like, man, actually being cursed here leads to blessings. You know, it really does. I just believe that entirely. And you bring up sort of Logan Paul and Jake Paul and just, yeah, those guys. It is hard for people that have some kind of success to go into YouTube with very little followers and start and have to build, because it takes an ego death to like get nobody looking at your videos, whereas some unknown person in the mainstream world has like millions and millions of followers. So that's why also people won't go on those avenues. I mean, how did you go about building that stuff up?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I didn't seek out to build anything. I never set out to, be any kind of influencer. It took me long enough just to be comfortable calling myself an actor. Can you imagine me calling myself an influencer with a straight face? I mean, come on. I just sort of was in the right place at the right times, and because, you know, it wasn't only pandemic stuff I was talking about. I was also talking about some of the racial justice stuff that was happening, just because there was nothing else going on, you know. Like I had two Twitter accounts, just as for instance my Twitter, just for instance. You know, I had one Twitter account where it was all my professional stuff, right? It was like, hey guys, I'm in a show. That's my back when I was a show business voice. I'm in a show, guys. Come and see me. I'm casting this and yada, yada, yada. Here's some reviews. Yada, yay.
Yay.
Nobody cared about that. And then I had, you know, my anonymous account, which is where I, you know, followed all the people I wanted to actually follow and shared my true opinions or whatever. And then once everything shut down and nothing was going on, you know, I just said, you know what? I can't be silent about this stuff. I don't know why I feel compelled to say something. And so I just started using my real name and began just airing my opinions. And at the same time, I messaged James Lindsay and he wrote me back, and I got in touch with Carrie Smith, who, for people who don't know, she hosts the Unsafe Spaces podcast, and she kind of made a splash when she came out as a liberal who voted for Trump. Carrie and I met up. Carrie and her at the time fiance and her now husband and I, we all met up at a Panera Bread and sat for a couple of hours. And my following on Twitter just kind of kept growing because I was speaking my mind. And you know, there was one point I was like, oh my gosh, I have 300 followers. This is crazy. Now I have 106,000, I think, which is hilarious. But you know, and I got invited onto a couple of shows like TimCast and Trigonometry, and my following just kept kind of growing. And Twitter sort of really suits my strengths. You know, when I was a senior in high school, my AP English teacher, you know, mentioned to the class that I'm very good at saying a lot in fewer words, and I'm also a big smartass. I've been one since I was a kid. So Twitter just, you know, my two biggest personality traits or strengths.
Yeah, your Twitter game is enviable, Clifton.
It really is. Yeah, it's a dubious trait. But because of that, and that continued growing and that continued following, you know, and then because there's also in other genre stuff, right? Like Friday Night Tights is another example. You know, the Nerd Erotic and Geeks and Gamers, these other sort of nerd culture YouTube channels that I also crossed paths with. So I had this sort of brainy Trigonometry crowd and the centrist sort of TimCast crowd. And then there's the sort of nerd, maybe center right / video games, comic books culture with Friday Night Tights and other channels that I've crossed paths with. So what's been interesting is that, you know, effectively when you're auditioning, you're trying to get work, your audience is, you know, a bunch of pretentious progressives in New York and LA. And then by extension, mostly white, affluent, quote unquote liberals in New York and LA. And now it's like, well, it seems my audience is the rest of the world. So there's sort of a win there.
And a lot of those people are probably tuning into and secretly loving it, but they just can't outwardly support you just yet. Let me go to a quick break, Clifton, and then we'll get back and talk more about this and also the docuseries and more right after these words on TNT.
TNT Radio's Chris Smith.
The latest policy stance delivered by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis this week on Ukraine. Now, this will upset the mainstream. He does not want the United States to keep funding Ukraine's defense against Russia's invasion. Now, given the fact that he's got a good chance of becoming the next president, this is quite significant. He will withdraw aid to Ukraine. Now, before you all kick up a stink, I agree with DeSantis because it's Europe, not the United States, which should be pitching in the most, and they are not. What is wrong with many of these European giants? It is in their backyard. It's not in the backyard of the United States. It's certainly not in the backyard of Australia. They always leave it to the United States to mop up their mess. Well, if they couldn't contain Vladimir Putin, and I think that's fair enough when it comes to France, they should do and carry the greatest weight in their support for Ukraine. Interesting comments from Ron DeSantis.
Chris Smith on TNT Radio.
At Smile Train, we envision a world where every child with a cleft has the opportunity for a healthy, happy life. Children with clefts often struggle to eat, to speak, even to breathe. Addressing every challenge often requires more than a single surgery. That's why Smile Train empowers our medical partners to care for the whole patient and provide ongoing, comprehensive cleft care. Comprehensive cleft care includes speech services, life-saving feeding and nutrition programs, psychological counseling, orthodontics, dental care, diagnostic, and hearing services. Smile Train supports these essential treatments for as long as each child needs to reach their full potential.
Visit smiletrain.org to donate and change a child's life forever. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
The Congo provides 60% of the world's cobalt. Children as young as 7 breathe in cobalt-laden dust so you can drive an electric vehicle. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. I'm here with Clifton Duncan, a classically trained actor, and ye gad, an influencer, indeed. He's got a big Twitter following and YouTube following. He's a podcaster as well. And there's this new docuseries. Tell me about this. Follow the Science, which has Zuby in it and Dr. J. Bhattacharya, a few others. What is that?
Right. So Follow the Science, it is a crowdfunded, donor-based, donor-supported, nonpartisan documentary. We want it to be a series. And the first episode is called Follow the Science, Lockdowns Go Viral. And it explores the question of whether or not lockdowns were effective in saving lives. And I play the narrator in it, and it features commentary from people like Jay Bhattacharya, Zuby, popular commentator. Nick Hudson is another figure who appears, who runs Panda Data, who's been doing great work in South Africa. So it's a very much a, it's also David Katz, who I know is a sort of New York Times kind of lefty. So there's people from all over the spectrum, so to speak, political spectrum, commenting on this. And I play sort of the everyman who comes in with one perspective, and we go through each step of the scientific method, you know, from stating hypothesis and, you know, formulating, doing your research, doing experiments, and formulating your conclusion and seeing if it's right or not. And it's meant to be very accessible. The tone is very sort of upbeat and light, very sort of family oriented. But we cover complex issues and try to do them in an entertaining and enlightening and fun way as we explore these conversations that really should have been had in the first place.
Is anyone pro the lockdown? I mean, I don't want you to give the whole thing away, but I would be like surprised if anyone came out and said they thought the lockdowns were a good idea at this point.
Well, I think it's a good thing that it's coming out now. I'll just say that because, you know, a lot of the quote unquote conspiracy theories are as always coming to pass now. So it seems like the climate is ripe for a really serious exploration. And I think people are sort of more primed and ready to hear a different story.
It sounds like a gentle onboarding, inviting the people sort of middle of the road in this whole debate, or the people that might have been extreme at the beginning who have started getting doubts. This is sort of feels like a rainbow colored bridge, inviting them to our way of thinking. Am I right?
Well, I forget who it was who says this concept. Maybe it's Edward Dowd. I don't know, but it's this. You know, you want to reach out to those people who are, and he has a phrase for it, but they're kind of on the fence, but only privately, you know, like they kind of know something is up, you know, like there's people who are like, you know, hey, this is a extinction level event, you know, and they're going to have us injected with all kinds of you know, nanotechnology or whatever. And there's people who are
different
just,
spectrums. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
And but I think there's a lot of people who from the beginning have been like, well, this is a little weird, but I'm just going to keep my head down because that's just the easiest thing to do. It's the path of least
most
resistance.
Most people. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And but now I think those people are greater in number. I mean, just going back to the entertainment industry and how extreme that they've been. I mean, you know, there's a story that broke the other day I saw making the rounds of Tilda Swinton, the actress, saying that,
refusing,
you know, I'm not
to
wear,
a mask.
Masks anymore. And it's like, it's
freaking
spring 2023. And you're still talking about this? I mean, in Atlanta, things have been pretty much normal for like a year now, at least. It's, you know, but they're still doing it, and they still think that they're smarter than you for doing it. It's insane.
I was in New York recently. Nobody was wearing a mask there really anymore. I was kind of surprised about that. At least, I mean, I didn't really do much subway stuff, but just out on the street, they weren't really there. It was like, oh, okay, I guess everybody's gone past it. I mean, you mentioned earlier about the woke people getting sort of sick of the woke police. And I mean, obviously that seems apparent to me. I was sick of it a long time ago. So yeah, it gets tedious after a while. But this whole COVID debate gets tedious as well. And like, I don't know, I saw a news report of a weather meteorologist passing out on, you know, and we just never even saw stuff like that before recently. And now we see it all the time. But it just seems like the way the media can operate and how many different worlds people live in, do you think that there's going to be any kind of retribution or sort of end to this, or is this just going to fade out and people are going to kind of go back into their corners and life will move on into some other wild events, nuclear war, breakdown of civilization? I mean, I'm starting to think that this thing is just maybe going to fade.
Yeah, you know, I'm sort of that opinion, I have to be honest. You know, I think it's just going to kind of linger in the air like a wet fart for a while, and
yeah,
at some point it'll just be like, you know, I don't think there will be any apologies. I don't think there's really going to be any sort of real accountability. It's just going to be that thing that happened, and you know, wow, really? Yeah, I can't believe I actually I put a mask on my kid just to go to the grocery store. Man, that was weird, wasn't it? Remember that time we cut off Gertrude because she didn't want to get the vaccine, even though it didn't really matter in the end? That was crazy that we did that, you know, 5 years ago. Wow. Well, anyway.
Right. There's already been so many weird signs, and people still who are, you know, fully ensconced in that view that it was the right thing to do to inject everybody and all that, still believe that, or they're still holding that position. I just would have thought there's enough evidence at this point to, you know, have some tribunals going on or you know, real outrage. And then you have the Twitter files that got me all excited for a while, like, oh, it's coming out, here we go, this is going to shift everything. And it's just like the way media is like a shotgun scatter. It's just everyone follows their own echo chambers. I don't know. I think, yeah. So have you thought about where you're going to go in terms of your commentary? Do you think like that? I mean, or is it just a day by day thing? Are you getting sick of commenting on the COVID narrative?
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm pretty much, I'm tired of it, you know?
Right.
And I guess I'm sort of making peace and very slowly coming to terms with, like, you know, like I said sort of before, I wish I were better at pivoting, and you know, it's just the damage has been done and lessons have been learned. And maybe instead of holding on to what the past was and holding on to that bitterness and this idea of needing to needing someone to be held accountable for something,
Vindication. You know,
right. I don't know how much it's really serving me at this point. And, you know, so maybe that energy is better used, as you just asked, considering what you just asked, which is where do I want to take the commentary. And, you know, for me right now, I think my biggest, concern or my big thing right now is that people aren't really talking in a meaningful way in this space, whatever this space is, about art and about why it's important and why it matters. And, you know, so many of us are talking about, you know, this authoritarian creep and how everything's sort of devoid of any kind of soul, and how so much, you know, art is just not art, but so much of our society is seems to be devolving and degrading. And part of that is the creative output of the culture that you're complaining about. And, you know, I see people all the time that sort of overlook what it is that we do and how it can add to a well-rounded life. So I think my perspective is going to shift in sort of being an ambassador in that way and saying, you know, hey, look, you know, another way to beat the sort of cultural malaise, the societal decline that we're on, is to really invest in your own, you know, our own creativity and our own capacity to create art and supporting artists who don't hate you. And helping them build a new culture and to push back against all of this sort of cynical, nihilistic, just dead on the inside garbage, you know what I mean? And I'm going to shift my focus to. I mean, I love politics and all that stuff, and that's interesting to me, and I'll keep commenting on it. But in terms of finding my niche, I think that's the direction to go in. It's just, you know, being an advocate for for art and artists in some way.
I gotta say, man, as your life coach, I feel like that's a real breakthrough. I'm sorry. I think every fiber of my being wants to cheer from the balcony for you, Clifton, because to me, that you just said a great thing. And I really believe, you know, there might not be this vindication, you know, this Nuremberg thing. It might never happen. But victory will come from people sort of redefining their lives the way you just described doing, and becoming, you know, an ambassador for the arts is an excellent way of doing that. I want to talk more about that in the final segment right after this break here on TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen testified before the Senate Finance Committee today, and she admitted that the Fed's rate hikes played a role in the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. She also admitted that Silicon Valley Bank received special treatment and that community banks might not be so lucky. Indeed, she all but said the quiet parts out loud. Hey, Heartland, and all you red state MAGA mutts, we hate you. In case you hadn't figured it out, we will contaminate your air and water. We will shutter your banks and businesses. We will kill off all your livestock. We will poison your fields. And we will smoke you out one way or another. We want you dead. Oh, and she also admitted that Social Security benefits will be 24% lower in 9 years when the federal government's retirement Ponzi scheme finally goes bankrupt. Not to worry, I've known since the 1980s that I and my generation were going to get stiffed on Social Security. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Emergency, police, fire, ambulance.
Yeah, g'day, mate. Need an electrician.
Do you need police, fire, or ambulance?
No, I just need an electrician. I've got a couple old crappy PowerPoints I need to get changed
Look,
over.
Look, I'm sorry. I can only connect you to the police, fire, or ambulance.
I need to talk to an electrician.
This is for emergencies only.
This is an emergency. I'm moving into the house and I need to get an electrician to change these PowerPoints.
000's sole job is to connect you to your nearest emergency service. So please, stay relevant and save 000 for urgent assistance only.
If you're talking about it,
we have to stop being naive about the threat we face from China.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. I'm talking with Clifton Duncan right now. We were just talking about the importance of art and shifting the narrative from the echo chamber of division into something more positive as a way towards true victory. I think one of the things that will get people, that will get in the way of that, Clifton, is that both sides are addicted to likes and when there's engagement. And these divisive issues, I think, tend to get a lot of that. So when you go a bit more artsy or a bit more spiritual, people are a little bit less interested. Do you find any of that? Have you experimented with any of that?
Yeah, you know, I've been, especially in the past, maybe the past month or so, sort of perturbed by, I feel like, everyone is becoming kind of radicalized, at least online, and just watching
our side too, right? Our side too,
yeah, right. That's what I mean. You know, I mean, and
I've noticed that too, dude.
I mean, you know, I'm not sure what my side even is, or you know, even the notion of being on a side at this point.
Right. That's the wrong way to put it, but the truth or side, air quotes. I don't know. You know what I mean. The people that question the mainstream media narrative, let's say.
We'll say awake, not woke. You know.
Yeah, that's that.
We'll say awake, not woke.
Okay.
You know, it's tough. But, I mean, I do see some people now who are beginning to see the same things, you know what I mean? Which has been interesting. I mean, even just up until a few months ago, watching scientists talking about erstwhile finance guys talking about beauty and art and these kinds of more intangible subjects. I'm seeing people now who are seeing the same things that we're seeing in terms of people being like radicalized. And
right,
you know, and I know for me, some of the statistics I've seen lately of teen suicides and rates of depression and anxiety, which of course were all exacerbated by this ridiculous over-the-top pandemic response. It's all been made worse, but we're radicalizing our children into these absurd belief systems and these apocalyptic sort of belief systems where they're thinking we have to act now or the world's going to end, we're all going to die.
Right.
And you know, this is the best time to be alive in human history, but they think it's the worst time to be alive. And everyone's racist and oppressive. And, you know, there's a rise of Nazism and fascism and transphobia and everything like that. And so these kids are miserable and we don't have anything to offer them. And at this point, you would think that, you know, these people who are awake, not woke, who think they have all the arguments and they have all the smart people and everyone on the left, so to speak, you know, they're crazy and dumb. They don't know anything. Yet they're the ones who are in command of the culture, aren't they? So what does that say about you all you're allowing them to wrest control like that? And part of the reason is that you spent all this time devaluing the power of art. This is what I'm getting at. You know what I mean? Because then you complain about cartoons like, you know, The Proud Family, or you complain about how bad the music is and how it's influencing kids. You complain about all these cartoons or other, you know, the declining quality of music or TV or films. So you complain about these things. They do impact your life, but you don't care about them otherwise. And you know who does care about them is the quote unquote left has, and that's where they've been really strong. And so they've been able to exert their will over the culture because of that, because they have seized command of art and entertainment. And, you know, and so, and, you know, I mean, we could talk about economics all day and foreign policy all day, and those things are important. You know, at the same time, stop overlooking the art and the culture. It's just, you know, it's right in front of your face and you can't see it until it's too late, and then you complain about how bad it is.
Well, anger is a destructive force, and especially righteous indignation, because especially if you think you're right, you know, and I'm guilty of this, and it's something I think I've overcome more recently. And it speaks to what you're talking about, because you think you're right. Maybe your life got robbed of some opportunities because you spoke up and that's what you're supposed to do and everything like that. And nothing, no hate against doing that. But if you hold on to the anger of it, yeah, you don't create what you're talking about. You don't create a new culture. And then meanwhile, you have the left, like you said, or the supposed left or whatever. These dichotomies are kind of false anyway, but whatever. Just, you know, the other side is getting busy. And so I totally agree. If you surrender your anger and you lean into forgiveness and you just get into the moment and you start creating from now, and just really build the culture. And if you want to hear tunes that aren't satanic or don't have satanic messaging or whatever it is that offends you, make them and then get them and make them good enough to where they can't be denied. Make art good enough to where it can't be denied. I'm super into what you're saying right now. I totally agree.
And, you know, I mean, sort of my message, if anything, has been, even if you don't consider yourself an artist, you know, you might be a trucker or, you know, I'm trying to find parallels between artists and tradesmen. You know what I mean? If you practice, right. You study a craft, you know, you play an instrument, or, you know, I study a character, I'm building a scene, I'm, you know, working on a song or whatever. I mean, it's my responsibility. I'm building something. Like, some people are building furniture, you know, or houses or computers, and I'm building a character, or someone else is building an album or something like that. And so trying to find these parallels between, you know, the artists and the lay people is one, I think, worthy mission. But another thing is also encouraging people to just to indulge in their own creative pursuits. You know, even if you don't think that you're an artist, you know, doodling on cocktail napkins or writing down little stupid ditties or poems, or, you know, doing your own little amateur songwriting or something that you're, where you're indulging your own creative faculties, your own imaginative faculties, and channeling whatever you're feeling into it that way, it's just sort of doing your own little part to build culture. And and on top of all of that, though, you know, you have to, there has to be a resurgence of, and it's going to sound corny and people are going to be like, ah, what are you talking about? But, you know, beauty and transcendence and, I think a lot of us feel like we are becoming so unmoored and so morally warped and upside down and just, you know, completely divorced from reality.
Right.
And I think part of the answer to that is building, culture and recognizing, you know, that's why we have cave paintings, dude. I mean, there's creativity inside all of us. And I think the more that we indulge in that, then the healthier our culture can be at large.
I mean, now who is the life coach in this interview? Because I'm telling you, man, I'm beaming with inspiration, dude. I feel like making a jam right now. Listen, it's not corny at all. It is the way, I mean, it's spiritual warfare as well. It's the opposite of corny, because to promote beauty, to promote this thing, you mentioned teen suicide. And it's like, so we have to, you know, from our heart and souls, give, you know, inspired reasons for people to live. And we do that through art and through culture and through creating beauty out of the burdens that we've been in. And so this is one of probably the best times to do that, because, you know, we've all gone through a lot personally, and society is obviously going through a lot, and we still are. So this is when art and culture and all the things you're speaking on really thrive and really sort of transcend into new dimensions.
Well, you know, there's a Twitter account. I can't remember what it's called, and I feel bad, but it was just a close up of a picture of some sculpture. I don't know what the sculpture was, a marble sculpture, and it was like, you know, remember there was a time where human beings were capable of stuff like this. And you know, just in this little picture of this sculpture, this is that these sinewy arms and legs that look like they're alive, you know, like the muscle and the flesh and the bone. It's so detailed and so utterly breathtaking in its beauty that looks like it's alive, but it's a piece of marble. You know what I mean? And yeah, it was such a poignant tweet to me because it said, you know, somebody with discipline and with vision and with dedication and skill and just with creative will, you know, built this thing. Like they took a slab of marble and created something that's living and breathing. And we're sitting here hundreds of years later, and we can admire that person's work even long after they're dead. I mean, there's something that's powerful about that. And that is what art and creativity can accomplish when it's really, really focused. And so, you know, I think it's just a force that people are not, it's an untapped force that could perhaps be wielded as a weapon against the encroaching darkness. There's your life coach quote.
I love it, man. I'm gonna, how much do you charge an hour, man? Listen, when it's really, really focused is what you said in that sentence that stuck out the most, because that is really what's under attack, is our focus through all these games of division. The next new apocalyptic event, it's going to be nuclear war over in Russia and Ukraine. Now we have the banking system is collapsing. Oh no. And they want us to eat bugs, and now COVID, and everybody needs to get injected, and it's the new world order, and it's the sign of the beast and all that. You know, it's one thing after the other, and yet here we are. You know, I mean, and I'm not saying bad things aren't happening, and I'm also not saying you shouldn't speak out, you shouldn't, be involved. But I am starting to believe that all of the sort of chaos and chatter is the actual weapon leveraged against us, and it certainly is in terms of our creative potential. Because what you said, when it's really, really focused, we need focus. We can't be scattered with all the world's issues and then create something like this marble statue you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, that's the challenge, isn't it? There's so many distractions. Although, to be fair, I do tell people all the time, I urge people to, you know, get off of the internet and off of social media and stop watching the news and to get out and talk to people. And I think you'll see that, you know, we have far more in common than that we're being led to believe. But I mean, I very much take the, I think Camille Paglia is the person who gets this the most. And she talks about how, you know, America, it's very much more of a utilitarian culture. And so they're not quite as focused on the arts. And it's not as though there's no sophistication there, right? Other cultures, if you're Chinese, Japanese, you know, British, French, Italian, whatever, they have their own cultures. You go to Africa, you know, they have their carvings and wood carvings and beadwork and other kinds of things that are in their arts tradition. And what do Americans have? You know, there's some things that we do that we've done, jazz and Broadway and Hollywood, you know, the blues, R&B, soul, hip hop, all that stuff. But is there a culture where we say, you know, where now we can, you know, we indulge in more of the, you know, I guess the fine arts or whatever, or do we find that to be kind of, again, corny and cliche? And you know, the idea that's in these industries now in arts and entertainment is that, you know, flyover country in the South or Red America or whatever are very sort of unsophisticated, and you know, they need to be educated, and they're a bunch of rubes. And I mean, when Meryl Streep got up at the Oscars, I mean, she said it herself, right? Meryl Streep goes, you know, people, they're going to be watching MMA and football, and MMA and football are not the arts. And I'm thinking to myself, there's the class divide right there, right? There's this idea that what we do is actually art, but what's done on the gridiron, you know, with all the strategy and all of the calculations and just the body in motion, right? And competition, you know, there's art in that. Or martial arts, you know, the art of war, that's what it is. It's literally in the freaking title, but to her, they're not the arts. And from what I've found is that there's tons of people who can be won over. and who do like this stuff. I said, look, if you like Game of Thrones, you'll love Shakespeare. You know what I mean? Or these crazy Greek right. plays. You know what I mean? And so
yeah,
there are people out there who are interested in this stuff and you can tap into with this stuff. And, you know, stop. People aren't dumb. That you don't need it like, an Ivy League degree to know what's good and what's not. And that's what needs to be remembered. And I think, you know, the more that we can tap into that in this space with like really just really great high caliber artists, the better off we'll be in the future.
Man, you said a lot. It's very inspiring. I could not agree more. And I, like I said, man, I am super inspired. I was already kind of on this trajectory, but it, I don't know, you sort of underlined it for me and motivated me in that direction further. Clifton Duncan, thank you for coming on. Tell people how to find you.
I'm on YouTube at Clifton Duncan. You can find me on Twitter at Clifton A. Duncan, and I'm on Instagram at Clifton Duncan Online. Thanks a lot, Joseph, man. It's been a great pleasure.
Man, what a pleasure, Clifton. I'm super inspired, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Keep listening, everybody. We'll be right back with more on TNT Radio.